Times are challenging right now in Chicago, but True Green knows that the grass will get greener. You may be spending more time enjoying your lawn this season than ever before, and True Green can help make your lawn happy, healthy, and weed-free. Call 866-967-6048 or go to truegreen.com/radio to receive 50% off your spring application. That's 866-967-6048 or go to truegreen.com/radio. At True Green, we'll take care of your lawn. You take care of you.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, this is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. Sports Radio 670 The Score, our radio.com sports station, WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by WOW, super fast internet with contact-free installation and no contracts. Details at wowway.com.
What's your name, son?
Danny Bernstein. I'm from Deerfield, Illinois.
Dan Bernstein on Chicago's Sports Radio 670 The Score.
That's enough. Don't care. Not interested.
Insightful sports talk for your workday from one of Chicago's most respected radio professionals.
Professional what?
Professional penis.
You don't know what the hell you're doing!
Dan Bernstein.
The guy is full of hot air.
In a semi-permanent state of flatulence.
Middays on The Score.
We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers, and we've got another jam-packed show for you today. Going to talk a little bit about the fits and starts of the return to sports that we're seeing across the board right now and how we're trying to speak this into existence. That's going to lead us up to what I expect will be a lively conversation with Eric Bischoff. He is the one-time executive producer and president of WCW. So we'll share his memories of some of the bizarro Dennis Rodman stuff that was going on concurrently with The Last Dance and everything that the Bulls were doing. Rodman was making a name for himself in the squared circle of the wrestling ring. Also, Steve McMichael was part of that as well. So we'll reminisce a bit with Eric Bischoff at 9:30. Dan Pompey of The Athletic and WSCR, our football expert, at 10 o'clock to talk about the passing of Michael McCaskey and give some context for what his life and career meant. Casey Johnson is going to join us at 10:20. He got Jerry Reinsdorf on the record talking a bit about how The Last Dance has portrayed him and his role in everything that was going on there. So Casey will give us the latest and just in general what's going on with the Bulls, sort of touch base with him there. Midday Midway is your way at 10:40. At 11, I want you to hear again the terrific interview that Mully and Haw did with Bob Costas. And it's always great to hear somebody of his perspective and intelligence on our airwaves. So we'll bring that back for you at 11. Also at 11:40, we've been watching closely, at least I know the leagues have, if we haven't. The sports leagues here have been watching what's going on in Germany with the return of the Bundesliga. So to give us some of the information about how that is working and the headwinds that are being faced there by a country that did a better job than we did handling this and leading through it and getting over it and testing where everything was better. It was just better public health, and that got them back to sports faster. But we'll see what lessons can be learned. Kevin Zipek, who is the host of the Screamers and Howlers podcast, and Mully and Haw's producer, is going to join us then to give us some information on how that's going. 312-644-6767 is our number at WSCR The Score. You email us at Bernstein@670thescore.com. That's where you go to listen to us live. We stream at 670thescore.com. You can send a text to 67011. The text zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. When you text, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. You can follow on Twitter. The show's handle is at Bernstein670. You can follow my personal handle if you want to do that as well. That is at Dan_Bernstein. Also, make sure you download the radio.com app. Just saw some data on that from a corporate email on what's going on with the radio.com app. You have been downloading it. You have been using it because the numbers are absolutely through the roof. To stream The Score on your mobile devices, interact with the show and the station on Facebook by liking the 670 The Score page. Jay Zawoski is our executive producer. Ray Diaz, also known as the Mexicutioner, is the man on the board doing what he does. So when we start reading all of these details about baseball, it's amazing to me, first of all, how thorough baseball has been in making sure that they at least give the appearance of having done this scientifically and having spoken with doctors and scientists about how to come back safely and how it all works. I am so cynical about the relationship between MLB and the Players Association, however, is that I wonder, in this 87-page document that's got all the details about where they can sit and who can high-five whom, and when there's somebody standing at first base, they are discouraged from fraternizing, from talking with each other, and they don't want guys to shower after the games. They want to essentially to show up in full uniform, play, and go home safely to wherever they are on their own. The rules about meals, I'm wondering how much of this did they pad in negotiable health rules? And that's just the skeptic in me, that I know we've got parallel tracks here. We've got two pieces going on. There's the labor track, where it's very likely the owners are lying to the players about their losses when they've been tanking their way to billion-dollar values and having so few people in the stands. I mean, look what happened with the Kansas City Royals, for example, where they go 4 years of tanking, and nobody's at the games, and they sell for $1 billion. I mean, now they're saying, well, that's it. We got to socialize our losses here. You got to help us out here because we're really in trouble. And the players say, well, show us that. Give us the data. And the owner's like, well, we can't find it. We don't know where that is. It got lost, and we don't have it, and we can't show you. So there's the money side of it. And then there's the safety side of it, of trying to push players to return by convincing them that everything's going to be okay. And first of all, it doesn't look fun. That version of baseball is this, it's a grab-assy, convivial sport, and it's really about some of that texture. It's going to be really strange, and it's going to be weird to ask players to space themselves out, to not be in the dugout unless they are expected to be playing, or be sitting in the stands. There's all sorts of things in here that we might be able to get baseball back, but what will we be watching? What kind of baseball is that? And now football is saying, well, we're going to have N95 material in the helmets to help protect guys. I mean, if you've tried to breathe through an N95 mask, if you think you're going to be running around and huffing and puffing and doing that, if you're going to anything protective, anything genuinely sealed and protective, is going to be pretty hard to play football in. So I don't know how they can get that done other than just waving around the flag of it to sound safe. But we're in I guess I could describe this as sort of an attenuated period right now. These careful fits and starts of reopenings of our impatience and our selfishness overriding our desire to protect the weaker people and the immunocompromised and older and less healthy among us. Now it's like, oh, I got to get my hair cut. We got to go to Chili's, so we're just going to say everything's fine. And the data is all in arrears. Obviously, it's going to take 2 to 3 weeks to know what's safe and what's not, which is why we're watching how some of these leagues return. It's a matter of trying to speak it all into existence. And everybody's doing it. People we trust, even people who've done a really good job, are talking about wanting sports back, and publicly and privately. We've heard Pritzker here talk about wanting sports back and how it can be done in front of no fans. And just yesterday, in fact, that somebody who has been one of the more sensible leaders that we've had, and basing what he has done in facts and in science, is New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. And here's what he said about wanting sports back.
I also have been encouraging major sports teams to plan reopenings without fans, but the games could be televised. New York State will help those major sports franchises to do just that. Hockey, basketball, baseball, football, whoever can reopen, we're a ready, willing, and able partner. Personal disclosure, I want to watch the Buffalo Bills, but I'm still objective. I'm acting as governor. There's no personal agenda here. Yes, I do want to watch the Bills, but that is not subverting my role as governor. I think this is in the best interest of all the people and in the best interest of the state of New York.
A Bills fan. He buried the lead in that he's casting his lot with the Bills. Good for him.
He and my mother can enjoy the games together, all the Buffalonians out there. And we all agree that we want it back, but that we have no idea. We are blindly pushing forward with this. Baseball obviously has the labor negotiation, the mistrust, and some of the headwinds there, where football is saying, well, we're coming back, and we're going to figure this out, and we're going to have our games when we want to have them, and the virus isn't in control. Apparently, the NFL is. And until the rubber meets the road on this, until you actually have players say, okay, whether it's baseball, basketball, football, hockey, it's one thing for four golfers to be out there carrying their bags and wearing their shorts and hitting the ball. And that was great. I watched that whole thing, and I loved it. But when you start talking about leagues and you start talking about how they're going to be quarantined and what these strict rules are going to be, not to mention enforcement, how will they actually enforce the safety rules? What punishment will there be for violating the safety rules? I saw in the Bundesliga already there was a coach, they called it manager, who had to quarantine because he went out to get like toothpaste or shampoo or something, and he left the restricted area of where they were staying to go get toiletries, and then he's got to be on the shelf for 2 weeks by their rules. So I just wonder, can our leagues do things similarly to make sure some of these rules aren't broken? Now, here's some really good perspective, too, on this that we heard on HBO's Last Week Tonight. Get a listen to a couple minutes here of how John Oliver tried to put into perspective the idea of just, we want sports back.
Ideas along the lines of bubble leagues have been floated for multiple sports. Major League Baseball, for instance, was at one point reportedly discussing plans to play all of their games in Arizona. And on its face, that seems simple. You just seclude the teams and you have them play with no fans. But when you think about that for more than a second, it all becomes much, much more complicated because, of course, you wouldn't just be isolating players. You'd be doing that for coaching staff, team physicians, trainers, umpires, clubhouse attendants, bus drivers, camera crews, and hotel staff, to name just a few. By one estimate, even a bubble league would require nearly 10,000 people, all of whom would need constant testing. And there is a key distinction here, because while pro wrestlers, UFC fighters, and college athletes have no union, those in major pro sports do. And therefore, they have significant negotiating power. So if you want them to isolate themselves from their families and put their lives at risk, you need their agreement. And some big names, like the Angels' Mike Trout, still have some significant concerns.
What are you going to do with family members? My wife is pregnant. What am I going to do when, you know, she goes into labor? Am I going to have to quarantine for 2 weeks after I come back? Because, you know, obviously I can't miss that, you know, birth of our first child.
Yeah. He's right. The league should not ask anyone to miss the birth of their first child. That is a magic moment. Now, second child, that's negotiable. Same different day. Third child, I'm not even sure the mother has to be there. But that first child is simply unmissable. And after pushback from multiple players, Major League Baseball has walked away from the Arizona idea, with an official even saying earlier this month, I would be lying if we were to say we have a good idea, they're all degrees of bad. And that is true of so many current proposals for sports to come back. The second you start reading the details of any plan, it automatically becomes ridiculous. The MLB's new idea is to play an abbreviated season in as many empty home ballparks as possible, but teams would still have to travel to those, meaning they're not being quarantined. And for a sense of just how easy it is for something to go wrong, look at Germany. That country has handled this pandemic much, much better, and they are in a very, very different situation than we are in the US. And that enabled their soccer league to actually come back this weekend, employing a kind of bubble league approach, without fans and with all team personnel quarantined in a hotel. But two players have already tested positive, forcing their entire team to isolate for 14 days, and one top coach missed the first game after he left the hotel to buy toothpaste and now can't rejoin his team until he has two negative tests. And that shows just how difficult it is to do any of this effectively.
That's John Oliver on HBO on Last Week Tonight. And I read all of the plans, and everything seems to make sense, and a lot of it is probably coming from a good place, even on the baseball side, when some of this has to be looked at as possibly negotiation. But to me, it's an enforcement issue also. Like, how can you really police it? It's hard enough to police the actual rules around the game and all of these sports without now adding an entire layer of off-field behavioral requirements where we don't know who's interacting with who. There is going to be honor system stuff. We don't know if somebody is going to leave and go grab something to eat and then have to say, I don't know, I didn't know. I didn't leave the hotel to go see my girlfriend or get something to eat. That wasn't me. Now, how is this going to work? Apparently, it's going to happen one way or another. At least the NFL is trundling forward with this, determined to force it into existence by just sheer force of will. At some point, we heard one player in there talking about what's going to be required of them, because we assume that that there's going to be actual. These are people involved with their own lives that may have friends and family that may be in contact with people who are at higher risk, who are concerned about what they could be bringing in and around as vectors. And earlier yesterday, John Heyman of Radio.com Sports, he is the MLB insider for Radio.com Sports, and he was on with Mully and Haw. So here's a couple minutes where he goes into what players are saying and thinking and what team personnel are saying and thinking about some of these rules and what now becomes feasible and what's not.
Communicated with coaches and players over the weekend to see what they thought, and boy, it's quite a list. Out or discouraged included showering, a fist bump, exchange of lineup cards, touching your face when you're giving signals, leaving the hotel, indoor batting cages. I think the indoor batting cages, I don't know they're going to be able to abide by that one. You've got a pinch hit against Garrett Cole or Jake DeGrom at the end of the game and you're cold. I can't imagine someone just going up there without taking a few swings. That one was discouraged, not out. So, you know, I think that if they get around to playing, and hopefully they do, there'll be a little bit of skirting of the rules probably. I know a couple people, not the majority, but a few that I talked to were discouraged and said, is it even worth playing under these circumstances? Is this a suggestion that it's more risky than I thought? Or is this going to be any fun? Can I play like this without a routine? I think they'll get past that, though. The biggest issues are obviously the health data and the scientists and doctors and what they say, the politicians, what they say, and, of course, the economics, which they're just getting started on that part of it.
You know, I watched some of the Bundesliga return over the weekend, which was really bizarre. Now, I don't know many players in the Bundesliga. I'm not going to pretend like I know anything about German soccer, but it was really strange to see the no crowd and to kind of follow, you know, the celebrations as such as they were, and to kind of think about sports in our country with our teams and no fans there. I wonder to myself, is it different if you know the players? Is it different if they're if it's teams you have an emotional investment in, as opposed to sort of just some event that you're watching because there's nothing else on? And I would imagine it will be a little bit different. But man, I got to tell you, this is going to be surreal if they actually pull it off.
Yeah, it's going to be weird. But I think knowing the fans and the storylines will help a lot. I really, to be honest, have not been able to watch much of the Korean games. Yeah. I don't know many of the players. I've heard of a few of them, but been difficult to do that. But I do watch the classic games on MLB Network, so because I know the people, even though I know the outcome, it's more interesting for me. So I think that, and plus the fact that there's going to be so little else on, the competition is very, very narrow or nothing. I think that the ratings will be huge. People will be into it if they get it done. At this point, I'm not sure it's any better than 50-50. They're preparing. They're like they're going to play. They're acting hopeful, but there's a lot of hurdles to go.
One of them includes the financials and the proposal with what the owners are going to present to players, John. And that was the other thing that leaked, the 12-page presentation they're prepared to make, and it includes in there potential projected losses of $640,000 per game without fans, and $4 billion in lost revenue, 39% of the revenue from 2019 from gate receipts spells a pretty bleak picture, and that tries to support the idea of this 50-50 revenue split and why it's necessary. What did you think of that?
Yeah, they painted a very bleak picture, and the union has not responded yet. The union, I believe, is still looking for some more paperwork that they've asked for. They've always wanted the books open. They're never going to be open fully. MLB says they've opened them more than other leagues and shown more than other leagues have. The union has gone over these numbers, and they have quibbles. They say they don't include the tax depreciation. They don't include the RSNs. They don't include, in some cases, the postseason money. They've got a lot of issues with it, so I don't think they're going to be accepting of the numbers, no matter what's shown or not shown. There's clearly a dispute. The union does seem entrenched against the revenue split, the 50-50 split, and they think that's like a salary cap. I got to see an economics at Northwestern, so I couldn't tell you why that's a salary cap, but that's what they think. So they're not going to go for that, but I think that there has to be some kind of compromise. What MLB told the union is basically there are two options. We can wait for this to go away, there'd be a vaccine, everybody be healthy, and we can play then, or we can redo this. Those are the two options. Now, maybe that's a negotiating stance, but I tend to not think so. So I think there has to be some sort of compromise, whether they play less than prorated, whether they play – let's say they play a shorter season, not 82 games, but 60 games. If you're paid prorated, there are fewer regular season games. The players would get less, and let's say they extend the playoffs even more and make it a 9-game series and an extra round or something like that, because the owners do make out on the playoff shares. One thing that I gleaned from this is that they don't believe now, because of the thought of the second wave and the talk by Fauci and others, that it's, if not only likely, maybe even inevitable that we're going to have a second wave. They're not envisioning playing deep into November. They're saying that they'll be playing similar season where it ends around November 1st because of the fear of the second wave. Now, the union will say that, well, that's just a negotiating ploy and what have you. I don't know. I'm not sure. I can't speak to that. But there's definitely an issue and a hurdle they've got to clear, and they don't have a long time to do it. I've seen people say they need to do it by June 1st. That I don't think is a hard deadline. They want to play the spring training by around June 10th. So that means June 9th is probably close to the deadline, not June 1st. So they have 3 weeks to figure this out.
That's John Heyman, Radio.com MLB insider on the Mully and Haw show. And as it was put by Ken Rosenthal and Evan Drellich in The Athletic, it's a negotiating catch-22. The league will not make a proposal until the union says it's willing to talk. The union will not talk until it receives a proposal and proof of financial distress. At some point, something must give. And he says that he doesn't know if it's a negotiating ploy. You always assume, when you have adverse parties in this case with this kind of relationship and so much bad blood and so much lying that's gone on for decades now between these groups, that you assume everything is a negotiating ploy. So we'll see. Jim from Platteville is on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Hello, Jim.
Hey, Dan. Hey, I have a very few things that I know for sure, but the NFL will play, and I think hockey will probably play too, because no one that's in their totally right mind plays either of those professionally. They're brutal, and you have to have a kind of cavalier attitude toward your life just to sign up to play for them.
That's not the issue, Jim. They know what they're doing. They know what they're signing up for. You can't catch brain damage from somebody else. Brain damage isn't contagious. A broken leg isn't contagious.
Still say that they realize the risk that they're playing with. And
it's not their risk. It's risk to others.
It's risk to them, too. It's always
but it's,
like...
But that's it's not like, what's, imp- so it's what's okay. important. Is, what's important is the risk to others. It's very unlikely that a professional athlete who contracts COVID-19 is going to die from it. it would be likely if that professional athlete became an asymptomatic carrier or became a vector, brought it home, brought it elsewhere, was part of something that could spread this in a time of public pandemic.
So since I'm in a job that's considered essential, I've had to work through all of this, my life is not is okay to be thrown away, but it's somebody else that
I'm not talking about. I'm not talking about you. It has nothing to do with you.
I have to make the same decision when I go out. I could just say, well, I don't want anyone around me to be taken down by this virus, so I'm not going to do my job, even though that's going to hurt people if I don't do my job.
People have made similar decisions.
The whole thing seems very selfish to me. You're painting the people who are out there and getting on with life as selfish. How about the people who don't care what happens? Look at the hospitals right now. How many people are going to die from the fact that they've put off surgeries that they should have had? They don't want to go in for treatment because they're afraid they'll pick up something while they're in there.
Yes, that's true. There's all kinds of sacrifices going on right now, but I'm explaining to you why your point about football players and hockey players somehow being reckless and not caring about their health and what they're doing to themselves is not applicable here in a time of contagion.
Well, we disagree.
It's simply not. It's not a disagreement. You can't catch CTE from someone else. You can't catch a torn ligament from someone else. You can't catch bad knees from someone else. Also, an examination of hockey, while you bring that up, and appreciate the call, that it may just be that hockey ends up the safest possible sport because everyone is gloved. No one is actually touching what is shared with bare hands, and everyone could be required to wear a plastic shield. It may just be that that's the sport outside of golf and NASCAR, that of the major sports, that could be the one that ends up coming back in a way that could be seen as safe if obviously there are certain very restrictive protocols in place. We are looking forward to having a conversation with former WCW showrunner Eric Bischoff. Talk a little Dennis Rodman, maybe a little Steve McMichael as well. He's right around the corner. Keep it here on The Score.
Bears head coach Matt Nagy talked to the Mack and Parkins show.
So when you bring in these guys that you have a relationship with, you know that all they're going to do is add to that. And how does that not get you excited knowing they're bringing what they know into what you've already built here with these guys, what these players have done? We're in a good place right now, and we're really looking forward to getting started.
Hear the entire Mack and Parkins show interview with Bears head coach Matt Nagy at 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
This is Boomer Esiason with the Radio.com Sports Minute. Baseball's new 67-page health and safety manual is mainly devoted to social distancing and COVID-19 testing protocols. However, sprinkled throughout are such sanitary strategies as no socializing with opponents, no around-the-horn handling of the ball, no schmoozing with first and third base coaches, and no mascots. In other words, for safety's sake, let's drain the fun out of the game. Memo to the Wilpons, bring Big Sexy back. I know Bartolo Colon will be 47 when play begins, but he wants to come back. Ideally, believe it or not, as a Met. Who makes fans smile more when he swings and misses and his helmet falls off? Whose 2016 home run was one of the greatest moments in baseball history? If we can't have Mr. Met this season, let's have Big Sexy's farewell tour. In fact, if we must have a universal DH, then give Bartolo 4 at-bats a game, I say. I'm Boomer Esiason.
You work hard for your money. You should be rewarded for that. That's why so many people are switching to Consumers Credit Union. Member-owned, Consumers offers tremendous advantages, like earning up to 5.09% APY for doing things you're likely already doing. Plus, you can use any ATM anywhere, and Consumers refunds the fees. It's no wonder Consumers Free Rewards Checking is recognized as one of the best high-yield checking accounts nationwide. Account qualifications apply. Signing up is a breeze at myconsumers.org. Consumers Credit Union, federally insured by NCUA.
What would happen if you suddenly lost your electricity or your natural gas, even your cable TV, because a neighbor didn't contact Julie before starting a digging project? From trees and mailbox posts to fences and decks, remember to contact Julie before you dig. Know what's below. Contact Julie 2 business days before you start. Simply call 811 or go online at IllinoisOneCall.com.
It's a free service. It's smart and it's the law.
Dan Bernstein here. You know, for a couple years now, I've been talking about my friends at Aloha Restoration, but with all the storms that have been hitting lately in Evanston, Skokie, Winnetka, and more, I wanted to mention Aloha Restoration's parent company, Aloha Construction, because with everything that's been going on with all the rain and all the water, Aloha Construction is providing free property inspections. They can check your roof, check your siding, check your gutters, all while practicing a contact-free process. That's right, contact-free. So call Aloha Construction at 847-540-7711 or visit AlohaBuilds.com. Aloha Construction, we rain when it storms.
Your home means everything to Lindholm Roofing, and as a family-run business for three generations, we have serviced many facets of our customers' homes throughout the years. Routine maintenance on your house's gutter system is always suggested. This will help prevent ground erosion, enable proper water control, and ultimately protect the value of your home. Go to our website, lindholmroofing.com. We'd love to come out for a free consultation. Lindholm Roofing. Our family has your family covered.
Times are challenging right now in Chicago, but True Green knows that the grass will get greener. You may be spending more time enjoying your lawn this season than ever before, and True Green can help make your lawn happy, healthy, and weed-free. Call 866-967-6048 or go to truegreen.com/radio to receive 50% off your spring application. That's 866-967-6048 or go to truegreen.com/radio. At True Green, we'll take care of your lawn. You take care of you.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
It's sports. Dennis Rodman is in more hot water this morning.
The talk at practice Monday wasn't just about what the Jazz was missing in Game 3, but who the Bulls were missing the day after. Dennis Rodman, once again, was nowhere to be found.
Was it like true that Dennis wasn't at practice today?
That's true.
Is that an excuse to him?
No, it's not.
What transpired?
I don't know. He's not here.
I got the world heavyweight title. And with Godzilla in the house, there will be no stopping NWO Hollywood now.
So Dennis Rodman ran off after game three.
He took a detour from playing the Bulls to become a wrestler with Hulk Hogan.
And by the way, big dog, I just love the way you threw Malone around like a dish rag. You just beat a bomb, bro.
I wasn't trying to eat. I was just trying to play basketball, party, da-da-da, girls. And so just be me, dead it, you know.
You know, there are some things worth missing practice for, brother.
He has a chartered plane ready and waiting to whisk him off to some wrestling deal where the scripted action called for him to bust some guy over the head with a chair.
Yeah, that really happened, and people are wondering, who may not have lived through it, just quite what the hell was going on. We still don't really know, but one of the men involved in all of that was our guest, who's joining us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park, Eric Bischoff, the former executive producer, president of WCW, the showrunner, if we use modern terminology. He's on Twitter, at ebischoff, and he's with us now on The Score. What runs through your mind as we relive some of this stuff, Eric?
Well, good morning, Dan.
Morning.
Dan, yeah. This is awesome. You know, listening to that replay, I've got one thing to say to the city of Chicago and the fans of the Bulls. You're welcome.
Well, can you say I'm sorry to the reporters that had to run around trying to cover all of it?
No, they need to earn their money. Well, it shouldn't be easy for them. This was fun. This was excitement. This was controversy. Come on, it's what reporters live for. Without controversy, they'd be sitting in a library reading a book. This was exciting stuff.
So how did it happen? How was the initial outreach, the initial contact, when you realized this was possible to write him into this?
It really started with a phone call between Hulk Hogan and Dennis's manager at the time, a guy by the name of Dwight Manley. They had an initial conversation. I think Dwight reached out to Hulk. They were able to make contact somehow. and, you know, put the idea out on the table that Dennis was really interested in getting involved in wrestling, and would we be interested? Hulk called me immediately after he hung up with Dwight. I called Dwight back, and within a couple of days, we had a deal.
So how did you deal with the NBA, his responsibilities, knowing that there could be conflict? And this, I mean, it's the middle of the finals, and he's showing up to hype an upcoming match, literally in the middle of the NBA finals. Did you anticipate any sort of business conflict at all with the NBA?
Yeah, it was a very tricky situation because at the time, you know, WCW, people may or may not know, was owned by Turner Broadcasting, which owns TNT. And TNT had the NBA television rights. So, and to make things even more complex, my boss, even though I was the president of WCW, I had a boss within Turner Broadcasting. His name, by the way, was Harvey Schiller. Harvey Schiller's name came up early in the Last Dance documentary, a comment that Michael Jordan made about him, which was pretty unflattering, actually. But nonetheless, my boss was responsible for managing the relationship in the television rights between the NBA and Turner Broadcasting for TNT. So I was kind of stuck in the middle and had to be careful. You know, whatever I did, I couldn't do anything that would force us to run completely afoul of the relationship with the NBA, because that could have jeopardized a much, much bigger revenue opportunity than a WCW pay-per-view. But we were able to navigate it.
So the line had to be drawn then, because I would think that given the chance to cross-promote, that had Rodman, I don't know, spray-painted NWO into his hair or WCW into his hair, or had something, you know, been able to show up at you know, walk into the building in t-shirts and all that, I'm sure you thought about monetizing the advertising value above and beyond his appearances on Nitro.
Well, yes, not so much directly monetizing in terms of t-shirts and that kind of thing, although, you know, that was part of it, but that wasn't the big opportunity. The big opportunity, and again, you have to kind of be able to imagine being in my shoes at that time. You know, WCW, you know, 18 months prior to this event, was a distant number two to the WWE at the time. There was no comparison. And we had made, over the course of 18 months, we had made a tremendous amount of progress and were very competitive in some ways in terms of television ratings. We were dominating the WWE. But in terms of the advertising market and the mainstream media, the kind of coverage we got, we were still struggling, and I knew that by bringing Dennis in, especially during the height of the playoffs and getting him involved, we would have so much media coverage that we could have never afforded to buy. We just couldn't. Every morning, Monday through Friday, you know, every morning drive time sports talk show, or even classic rock show, they talk about sports. This was all they were talking about. And that's where the real benefit came. I mean, obviously, it generated a lot of revenue from the pay-per-view. We did a record pay-per-view that particular year, I think, on this pay-per-view. But that wasn't really the big benefit. The big benefit is the branding opportunity that this created was worth far more than the money that was generated by the event itself.
How coachable was Rodman? Because with everything that he has to know about what the act is going to be, what the script is going to be, how it's all going to work. We've heard stories about as big of a maniac as he is. He's a really smart basketball player and understood multiple positions in their offense. And when he was at practice, he practiced hard and he was always ready to go. What went into you actually having to have him in a room, sitting down, reading stuff over, blocking stuff out, and preparing to perform?
It was, in many respects, it was some of the easiest training that we've ever done with a celebrity. Once we got him to the ring to work with him, the real challenge was getting him to the ring to work with him. You know, all of the training, the majority of it took place in Orange County, California. And, you know, it was myself and Hulk Hogan and a couple other people flew out there because he was obviously pretty busy. You know, he'd show up an hour late, hour and a half late, kind of hungover most of the time. But once he showed up and you actually got him in the ring, it was like an entirely different human being. I want to say this too, you know, Dennis and I are friends to this day. We don't see each other all the time, and you know, we don't send each other, you know, birthday cards and that kind of stuff. But I do run across Dennis a couple times a year, and I've worked with Dennis subsequent to this. I worked on him on another television show, you know, years after this event took place. And I, to your point, he's not only a smart basketball player, he's a very, very intelligent man. People don't really, if you don't get to know Dennis, and it's hard to get to know him beyond the veneer that we all see and hear about. But when you really sit down and he lets his defenses rest because he's a shy person. He's an introvert, which is another thing that people have a hard time figuring out. He really, really is an introvert. But once you have a conversation with him, I've had some of the most interesting, deepest, well-rounded conversations with Dennis that I've had with, you know, many of my friends. He's a smart guy.
We're talking with Eric Bischoff on Sports Radio 670 The Score. He is the former executive producer and president of WCW World Championship Wrestling. When the fights, the bouts began that involved Karl Malone later on, I'm wondering if you had a similar effect that professional baseball did when Michael Jordan was playing at AA. I happened to be working in minor league baseball at the time, and there was a lot of grumbling. There were a lot of up-and-coming guys who'd done the work, who'd been through the low minors, thinking, man, he gets gifted a spot here. And I know that professional wrestling is different than sports in that regard. But did you concern yourself with some of that, saying that you had guys who had paid their dues, who had done the work, who had tried to come up and through the ranks, and then all of a sudden, here come the two former basketball players, and they get the big splashy gig?
No, well, two things. Number one, wrestling is not that much different than traditional sports in terms of that kind of internal political, you know, tug of war that's constantly going on. It exists. It exists in a little bit of a different way, but it exists clearly. But what was interesting was, and I think this is where the difference is between professional athletes and professional wrestlers. Professional wrestlers know the bigger the crowd, the bigger the audience, the more money everybody makes. It's a revenue share at its opportunity at its core. That's traditionally how the wrestling industry works. So what, and the wrestlers knew that by bringing in Dennis Rodman and Karl Malone, you know, all boats rise with a high tide, and you couldn't make the tide rise any higher than that. So the talent themselves, the wrestlers themselves, were excited about it and very supportive of it and willing to do whatever they could do to participate or support it indirectly. So I didn't have a lot of internal issues in that regard. But what was interesting is the peripheral media, I still call them dirt sheets, but that's because I'm old. But the peripheral media, the wrestling media that covers it, like the pretender sports journalists, they hated it. Because, oh my God, he's ruining the legacy of professional wrestling by bringing in these basketball players. This is horrible. He should be burned at the stake. And because they don't understand the ramifications or the opportunities, I should say, of bringing in two big names like this during the peak of the NBA playoffs and the kind of downstream revenue opportunities that all of that creates, as well as the branding of it.
Somebody else who was involved in your league was Steve Mongo McMichael, who has for a long time been a larger-than-life character just in regular life here in Chicago, and he and his wife Deborah were a part of your narrative. What was it like working with him?
I had a blast working with Steve. Steve is my kind of guy. You know, I mean, I live out in the middle of nowhere, Wyoming. 40 miles outside of the east entrance of Yellowstone. And I live here because, I mean, I've worked hard to be able to live here because I love to hunt. I love to fish. I love the outdoors. I love the hike in the mountains and all that kind of good stuff. And Steve is much the same way, you know, growing up. He's a Texas guy at heart. So we got along on a personal level. Deborah and my wife got along. My wife often traveled with me to events. And after every show, while Steve was with us, for the most part, until towards the end, you know, Steve and I and Deborah and when my wife was around, we'd sit around after the show at the hotel bar and just have a blast. So I you know, we took a Harley ride together out to Sturgis, South Dakota. I had a blast working with Steve. I have nothing but great things to say about it.
I always tell the story. We had at our station many years ago, our late friend Doug Buffone, the former Bears linebacker, we had a big party, and it was like a celebrity roast of Doug Buffone. And the evening's rolling on, and I'm watching Steve McMichael drink. And I'm watching him pour a highball glass with just a couple of ice cubes in there of vodka. And drink it and pour another one. And drink it and pour another one. And this wasn't some kind of like Dean Martin apple juice thing where it's actually, you know, water. So this, and I watched it happen. And he wasn't slated to go on and speak until later in the evening. And eventually it becomes his turn. And I'm thinking, oh my God, this is going to be an absolute disaster. And I'll be damned, Eric, Steve McMichael walked up to that microphone and slayed it. Absolutely had the room in the palm of his hand, impeccable comic timing, knew exactly the tone of the room, and it was absolutely won the day. And I've never seen anything quite like it in my life.
It's amazing to watch a pro at work, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess I didn't want to admit it. I didn't want to think that, you know, that he was allowed to be that good at football and then be that that natural and entertainer as well. But he knew how to do it.
Well, what I meant by that is he was also a professional drinker. You know, he got pretty good at that.
I guess so. I don't know if you want to be proud of it, but he certainly has earned that. When you instructed a football player, a basketball player on the basics of your performances, whether it's learning how to fall squarely and correctly in a way you don't injure yourself, or learning leverages, learning how to get hit with a chair or hit with a chair, what would be the most challenging thing to teach?
Well, you know, I'm not a wrestler. I never was a wrestler. So whenever we'd bring somebody in, like a Dennis Rodman or Karl Malone, or even when Steve McMichael decided he wanted to get into the ring and wrestle as well because he missed the contact, that's really what it was all about. What we would do is we would pair, for example, with Dennis Rodman because of his relationship with Hulk Hogan. You know, I let Hulk basically teach and kind of evaluate, you know, Dennis, and see where Dennis was, how quickly he learned, what he was good at, what he might not be good at. You know, because it takes, you know, so people understand, it takes a good 3 to 5 years of training and working in front of an audience before, you know, a wrestler, for example, in the WWE developmental system is even really considered possibly ready for prime time. It's not an easy art to learn, and it is an art. The physical moves, yeah, they're athletic, the physical, it's timing, it's all the other things that sometimes sports are. But it's the psychology and the storytelling and the pace of things that's the art form. And I would, whether it was Steve or Dennis Rodman or Karl Malone, we would pair them up with the right kind of mentor, if you will, somebody that was a wrestler, to help guide them through and lay out their match so that we would accentuate the positives and avoid any negatives and asking them to do something that they either weren't comfortable or just not naturally gifted to do. The toughest part, I think, across the, and I worked with Kevin Green when he was playing with the Carolina Panthers and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Kevin was a natural as well. Actually, other than Dennis, probably the most natural professional athlete I've worked with. But the real challenge with all of them is getting them to slow down. Because when you're out there in a wrestling ring, it's like Shakespeare. It's no different than being on a Broadway stage. Well, it is different, but it's similar in many respects because you're playing to a large audience and you don't use dialogue like you would on Broadway, but yet you're telling a story. And the story manifests with a physical kind of presentation. And there's a lot of psychology that goes into that, storytelling, and timing is a big part of that. And what people, across the board, not only professional athletes, but anybody that steps into that situation for the very first time, they're nervous, no matter how gifted they are as a world-class athlete in their respective sport. Once you put them in the middle of the ring in front of 20, 30, 40, 50, 60,000 people, and they're doing something that they haven't been doing all of their lives, they get nervous just like everybody else. And the tendency for people when they get nervous is to rush. Whether they're talking, whatever it is, they rush. And when you speed through a wrestling match, the audience never really has a chance to catch up to the story. So it's really pacing and timing and getting people to slow down. The athletes themselves, Dennis Rodman, Karl Malone, they feel like they're going in slow motion because of the way they normally used to competing and playing. But in professional wrestling, that pace and that timing is so critical. And that's adjusting to that is probably the biggest challenge, much more so than learning how to do the mechanics.
We know currently that Rob Gronkowski remains involved tangentially in professional wrestling, even as he returns to the NFL. What tends to catch your eye as if you're still sort of, you can't turn off that part of your brain that would be wanting to cast somebody in something when you watch sports? What aspects of a personality or physical aspects do you see in somebody and say, hey, that's a possibility, that would be a prospect right there?
You know, it's the same quality that you would look for in anybody, celebrity or non-celebrity. And that's that. It's charisma. It's so hard to define. You know, it's not a tangible. You know, you can't weigh it. You can't measure it. You can't put it in a bottle or a box. But it's there. It's real. And some people have a lot of it. Some people have a little bit of it. Some people have none of it. And it doesn't matter how gifted somebody is as an athlete if they're not comfortable really putting themselves out there in kind of an over the top way. Or they really don't like, you know, speaking on camera. A lot of athletes don't. They're not comfortable with it. They're not good at it. That's the biggest thing that I look for is just, does somebody have that natural, larger-than-life personality? And Gronkowski certainly does.
How would you have handled things during a pandemic like this? Because right now with WWE having live matches, no audience, and maybe in conflict with some employees, how would you, as a president of a league or executive producer, try to balance doing your business with making sure that people are safe and making sure that public health is important?
That's a great question, but it's also one that's too hard to answer, honestly. So much depends, I think, on whatever external factors are applying pressure. If they were applying pressure to me, for example, if I was producing a show for a network that had no flexibility and, you know, said, look, either you produce a show or you're in breach of your contract, that's one set of circumstances that might cause me to look for ways to continue producing the show. If, on the other hand, I was working with a network that said, look, we understand, let's figure it out and come up with the next best solution as opposed to live shows, that would have been preferable to me. And it would be preferable, and this is 2020 hindsight, which is not really fair. I hate when people come out and I would have done this or I would have done that after the fact. You know, I could probably coach an NFL team to a Super Bowl game after the season's over, after all of the facts are, you know, out there, and after all the situations have been revealed and the plays have all been revealed, you know, it's easy to, you know, be an armchair quarterback. But for me, I think continuing to produce these live shows has done two things. But the two obvious things are, number one, the show themselves suck. They're just horrible. I can't watch them. You know, the audience is just as important of an element in a professional wrestling show as the two people in the ring battling it out for a belt or championship, right? And it's just, Elvis Presley said it once, the most important part of my show is the audience. And it's true, especially now that we're watching professional wrestling without an audience. It's just bizarre for me to watch. And the other thing that I think has occurred is it does put a bad, you know, there's about half the people think that we should go back to work and, you know, yes, mitigate, and let's get back to our normal lives as best we can. And there's a another percentage of people who think, oh, my God, we should all hide in our basement and not come out until there's a cure. Either way you go, you're going to irritate, probably half the audience. But I do think coming up with alternatives to the live presentation would have been a much better play longer term, because you wouldn't have offended 50% of your audience or whatever the percentage it is that resents you for producing live shows. And more importantly, in the long run, I think that continuing to produce these shows without any audience has actually hurt the brand itself. I think people are tuning out of it, looking for something else to do, and there's no promise that they're going to come back. You know, a guy by the name of Gary Considine told me once, Gary used to be the executive producer at NBC, Tonight Show with Jay Leno, good friend of mine, so I just got a text from him. Gary told me once, the audience votes for the month. And once they cast that vote and decide they're going to engage in something else for their entertainment, it's twice as hard to get them back than it ever was to get them in the room. And I found that, he told me that 20 years ago, and I find that so true to this day, and I think continuing to produce these shows with no audience has convinced the people that the fan base that, was there, that, this isn't really that exciting. I'm going to look for something else. And they found it. Probably WWE and AEW right now has probably lost 20 or 30% of their audience since this started.
Wow, that's fascinating. Yeah, that's really interesting stuff. And when you put it that way, and looking at that with in these fractured entertainment times, the number of things that can still be pulling at us for eyes and ears, how hard it is to get them to return to where they were. That's good stuff. And Eric, we really appreciate you being generous with your time today. And this is fascinating. Thanks for joining us.
All right, thank you guys. Be well.
You too. That is Eric Bischoff, the former executive producer and president of the WCW. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Dan Pompey of The Athletic and The Score. The Hall of Fame football writer will give us some thoughts on the passing of Michael McCaskey and what's happening with the NFL and their attempts to return. All that and more is coming your way. Don't go anywhere. You have The Score.
Mully and Hall, Chicago's sports morning show.
Bill Weddington.
What was your biggest takeaway as somebody who lived through that and participated in the documentary?
One of the biggest questions I get is, were practices really that hard? And they were, but it was fun because it was going to be a game and a challenge in practice every day. It's just phenomenal.
Mully and Hall, mornings 5 to 9 a.m. on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
The Chicago Window Guy is open during these difficult times. He's handling all your window and door needs. Make the call that I did. Call Russ Armstrong. He's the owner of Chicago Window Guys. And he'll come out to the house, or he'll do it virtually, and he'll say, okay, let me get a measurement there, and then he custom makes the windows, and then his people install them. I had some windows done. I couldn't be happier with the process, with the product. He offers a lifetime warranty on all parts and labor. And as I mentioned, he's offering virtual appointments over the internet or the phone. So set this up just by calling the Chicago Window Guys today at 847-881-3060. The first 10 callers that mention my name, Dan, get 10% off your order. 847-881-3060. Check out his reviews at chicagowindowguy.com.
Today's reality has forced us all to grapple with what's important and what isn't. And what will always be important is family and health. Unfortunately, snoring, sleep apnea, and nasal breathing problems have a direct impact on those two things we hold close. Living with any one of these issues compromises your quality of life, and that affects your whole household. It's not always easy to take action to change that, but Advent is going to help with a free virtual consultation. There's no cost and no commitment, and you don't have to worry about insurance or missing work to find out if Advent can solve your problem. During your virtual consultation, you'll chat one-on-one with a sinus and sleep specialist to find out exactly what you need to know. Text the word ADVENT to 797979 to schedule your free, zero-strings-attached virtual consultation. I'm Dr. Madhan Kandula. We won't be able to do this forever, but we're doing it now, because ADVENT knows when you breathe well, you live better.
We're all looking for a little assistance adjusting to our new lives at home. ComEd can help. Through the CARE Financial Assistance Program and flexible payment options, we'll try to find a financial assistance solution that works for you. we're also suspending disconnections and waiving any new late charges through at least June 1st. If your service has already been disconnected, please call us at 800-334-7661. ComEd. Let's power through this together.
AAA would like to thank all essential workers who have to keep moving while most of us stay at home. We'd like to help you by offering a curb-to-curb car repair service. You set an appointment, we pick up your car from your home, we repair your car, you pay via phone, and we drop off your car at your home. And as a thank you to all essential workers, we're extending essential service discounts on labor and select services to you until the end of May. You are today's heroes. Thank you. Call 833-222-3284 to set up service, or to learn more, visit AAA.com/hereforyou.
Hi, I'm Ryan Kelly. Even in these